It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hey, it's Ken Bergen here from the Hospo Reset podcast. Today I'm talking to Mike Madich from the Crooked Spire Cafe in Perth. We're talking about building a loyal community for your local cafe. I've noticed, I've met Mike a couple of years ago, but also noticed a lot of regular posts he does on social media, LinkedIn, about a lot of works he does with community activities. His cafe is very active in his local Chamber of Commerce, and these sort of struck me as a little kind of outside the usual activity for cafe owners who oftentimes just kind of come in, work hard, serve a lot of coffee, and then lock the door and go home again. It's a little different, I think. And you get a sense of what a wonderful and slightly crazy place Crooked Spire is from their website, crookedspire.net. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. So, yeah, but anyway, hey, Mike, great to talk to you today.
Well, thanks, Ken. Great fan of yours and been following your Facebook posts and your community that you've set up. So keep up the great work, mate.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, you tell us about, I mean, there's the website, which gives us one impression, but it's a living, breathing organism with lots of people and business owners, et cetera. Tell us about Crooked Spire, how you started, how it's different, how it's the same as other businesses.
Yeah, look, so we opened the doors 7 years ago and it was really trial by fire. My experience in cafes was I was a waiter when I was 15 and loved the experience, loved the fact that the Liquorland next door thought I was 18 so I could buy my VB while I was on shift. Since then, I worked in sales for really boring industries like the steel industry. I then got involved with construction, really enjoyed that. Then we got involved with a community group that was building a community center and a cafe. Spent about a year of my Sundays and Saturdays volunteering. We were ripping up toilets, building windows, putting, installing and making this cafe. And I was very much involved in the process the whole time. The way it came about was I mentioned to my wife that I'd love to give something like that a go one day. And she mentioned to the director of the community center, they were going to try and run it with volunteers, believe it or not, and then realized this thing's probably bigger than that and they needed someone who understood what they were about. So they approached me and said, will you take on the lease and will you run the cafe? Now, I spoke to my accountant but never asked him how I was going to pay for it. He never asked me how I was going to pay for it. So we just did it, just no one asking anybody who was coming up with the money. So we had a go and we've landed on our feet. We've been here 7 years now, 7 years strong in Midland, which is about 30 minutes from the city centre.
Okay, what's the sort of demographic? Is it a family area or is it a kind of artsy area or is it a kind of, you know, working class area?
Look, it's probably a neglected area, if anything. Okay. Traditionally, it's a working class area. It's one of the oldest areas in Perth. It's forgotten. We're 30 minutes from the city. When we first opened, there was a whole bunch of suppliers that wouldn't deliver to me because I was too far out. Okay. And when you think 30 minutes. We're surrounded by the beautiful Swan Valley, which is one of Australia's oldest wine regions. We have the hills that leads into the countryside where there's a whole bunch of cockies who are growing wheat and cattle and everything else. And Midland is like a local hub. It's about as far into the city as the country people want to come. So okay. It's the end of a train line. It's known as a bit of a crime hotspot or has been, and also a high homeless population too. So if that sort of paints a picture, that sort of gives you the demographic of the area. What's surprising is the clients that we have. We have a lot of business folk that meet here. We also have a lot of young mums who come in after dropping their kids off to school or bring the babies through. There's homeless people who come and frequent the establishment, politicians, big business, small business. It's a really diverse group that come.
I say that because sometimes some of those groups are kind of like oil and water. They don't really mix under the same roof. Or business owners actually don't want, they say, oh, these young mums there kind of get in the way of everything or other than they spend all day or something like that. But you've managed, how many seats have you got? How big is the place?
Yeah, look, so the venue, we have about 80 seats indoors, but it's a really big venue. So it was formerly like multiple factory units that were together.
Okay.
It is on the main highway, which you think is great for traffic, but it's on a one-way street. So to get here, you've got to do loops and go around back streets. So it's actually not a great spot for people to come to. So we don't get our traffic from people coming past. We had to turn Crooked Spire into a destination point.
Right, okay. So tell us a bit more about that. What are the different elements that make it a destination?
So look, so one of the things I always wanted to do with hospitality, and you know, we're in this game because we're hospitable, right? And maybe it's my Southern European heritage, but I want everyone who walks in the door to instantly feel welcome. I want them to instantly feel like this is their place, that they own it, that they're the cool kids who are coming in. Sometimes I've been to different venues over the years and I've felt like I didn't belong there. I felt
interesting. You feel like you're not the cool person.
Yeah, that's right. And so here, what I want to do, what I wanted to create was I want anybody to come in and feel welcome. And you know, what I love is sometimes I laugh to myself because I walk in and my gardener, who was an ex-homeless guy who puts the furniture out every day and looks after the gardens, I walk in and I greet him. Then there's a politician, a federal minister who's there, who's waiting for his coffee so I can greet him. Then I walk over to a local special needs guy who works for another person who's been in the area for 20 years. I'll greet him. Then there's some big business guys who, you know, are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And then there's the guy who's a cleaner who's sitting down there. And it's those interactions and that diverse group of people, and I just love it. And I just see it as an absolute privilege to be able to serve these people every day.
So what is it that enables this kind of diversity? I mean, it's this space for everyone to kind of, not everyone's kind of cramped into the one small space. That's obviously one of the elements, and you're a warm, hospitable person. Is there other elements that make this kind of eclectic mix work? Because it's not a very common thing.
Look, it is very eclectic. Look, I think we even, like, for example, with our homeless guys, we have suspended coffees or pay it forward coffees available. Mm-hmm. Because there's a high population of homeless in the area, there is a real need for it. And before I ever dreamt of owning a cafe, I loved the idea. I loved that it was more than just another way to get another $5 out of a person to buy a cup of coffee that they're not going to drink. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that it's helping people and it gives people an opportunity to be generous, because many people walk past someone who's homeless and they want to help, they just don't know how.
Yeah.
Or if they give to a charity, they know 90% of.
And you know, one of the things too, we don't actually have coins in our pocket either.
Well, this is true. This is true. And so, look, you know, I see it as a huge privilege, and I know it's nothing to do with me, that it's my beautiful customers that will reach out and pay for an extra coffee so that someone who's sleeping rough can come in and grab one. And with that, we don't treat them any differently. They line up like everybody else. They get served like everybody else. We have a board, so they don't have to embarrass themselves to ask if there's one on there. And what that's done is actually it's taken away the barrier where while these guys are waiting, they're waiting with the people who've paid for their coffee. And so they start to have formal relationships.
Yeah.
It's people who are working and people who have got families and people who are in business are chatting to someone who's homeless and has been homeless for many years. And it takes away the stigma of you've got to be scared of these people, and actually gives this person self-worth as well.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. So tell us about the management structure. You're the business owner. Do you have a partner and who works for you? How many staff? How does it all kind of fit together?
Yeah, so look, I'm the business owner. I do have a venue manager, a head barista, and rely on those guys heavily to run that operation. So I will attend the business about 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And my job, as my wife likes to call it, is that I talk shit and I drink coffee. So my favorite jobs to do, I jump on the dishes, I'll jump on the till. I can't make a coffee to save your life, and I'm not going to prepare you food, but walk around the place and I'll greet people and I'll deliver plates. I'll help out where needed, and I'll just conduct business. I think that's my wheelhouse, and that's what I focus on. So I employ people to do the other things.
Mine host. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the kitchen? How is that set up? And so, what's the menu? What's the style of food? What do you need in skills there?
So look, we have a pretty basic menu, and we've really got a strong takeaway business here as well. So we have quite a large cake display fridge that has a lot of different foods, so they can heat that quickly, and people will have that inside, or they'll take it away. Mm-hmm. Plus, we do like a cooked brunch breakfast, so all your standard egg dishes and a few others, and we sort of have one or two cooks in the kitchen who will look after that, and often a kitchen hand. The kitchen, the servery is all in one section. It's a pretty tight space that's open, so people can see what's going on, and it all just comes out of there.
Right. Uh huh. Okay. And tell us about the tech and the systems you use to kind of tie it all together, point of sale and bookings and all those kind of things. What are some of the systems you use?
Yeah, look, so systems-wise, we do, for the point of sale, we do use Square, which is quite a decent system and quite a lot of functionality. I've found that the reports are really handy, the invoicing function. Another thing that we have at the venues, we have a function center that's attached to the building. So we have a 300-seat auditorium that gets used for lots of different purposes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And you're the caterers for that, are you?
Look, we're the caterers, we're the hosts, it's our function center. Okay, so nice. For example, we'll have on Friday, we'll have a business breakfast with 150 people, and that'll be a buffet breakfast with some guests on stage. It's a large stage.
Screen. Is that a regular event?
That particular one will be once every couple of months. Every Thursday, we have a B&I group that has about 30 people all set up on table rounds, and they'll meet from 7 till 9 in the morning. Saturday morning, we'll have a dance fitness class that meets in there for an hour. Saturday afternoon, there might be a kid's birthday party in there with a bouncy castle inside the building and whether other activities they're doing. Saturday night, there might be a wedding ceremony, reception, or some sort of party, which that can also take in into the cafe space too.
So you've got a function manager that looks after that, or is that you as well?
Yeah, look, recently I've employed the services of a social media company that specialise in booking functions. It's still early days, but it's definitely increased the inquiries about tenfold, and we've already have booked probably about five large functions from those guys, which is really
so that's cool. Quite a bit of pressure on the kitchen. I mean, at least the menu's known in advance and prepaid and all the rest, but that's quite a bit of volume, isn't it?
Yeah, look, and I mean, for example, with the breakfast that we'll do for 150 people, we've got the rolling chafing dishes, so and a hot box, so we'll prepare that stuff before people arrive, have it ready to go, so when the 150 guests are there and they're seated, the MC will call that it's breakfast and the tables will all get up and serve themselves. That was the best method that we found, and that works really well.
Yeah, it is what it is. And people kind of like that informal because it's usually a little less expensive that way.
Yeah, that's right.
As well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so tell us about community involvement, because that's really the topic of today. Sure. You've obviously got business breakfasts and business networking events and everything from kids' dance classes. But just on the business side, tell us about that, because I see that as such a huge opportunity for a lot of places. I mean, you've got a lot of space, but a lot of places that have got space, they don't seem to have much connection with the business. Obviously, they'll feed people for lunch if they want a coffee, but that's kind of reach out and a bit of an entrepreneurial activity you seem to specialise in. How has that grown and how's that come about? Is that just you being who you are? Or
look, years ago, I was involved with youth ministry and we used to go into high schools and primary schools and run programs for kids. And they were more often than not in underprivileged areas. Then on a Friday night, we'd run a youth program and we'd bus 50 to 80 kids into our program, do absolutely crazy stuff, try and speak positivity into their life and try and make an impact. And now, I did that for about 15 to 20 years, probably actually closer to 20. And one thing I was always doing, and a lot of that was often self-funded. The kids would chuck a couple of dollars in. We would go out and buy prizes. It was always quite a heavy workload. And now that I think about it, I don't know how on earth we did it. But we had businesses donating buses to us every week so we could bus the kids in and volunteer.
Right.
And no one was paid to do that. And one thing I remember very clearly was often I'd be asking people for free stuff. So I'd go to the surf shop and go, hey, have you got any prizes for us? Or I'd negotiate with the bouncy castle operator to see if they'll give us a free castle when we bought the bucking bull and those sorts of things. And I always hated the process and actually got told no a lot. And so one thing I see that as a business operator and as a person, I love to be that person that when somebody asks, I can say, yes, absolutely. So when I have a cricket club come in and you can see they're nervous and they're going, hey, would you support the fairest and best winner each week for our cricket competition? I love to make it as easy as possible and say, absolutely done. And we'll give them a $20 voucher, which is enough for a breakfast and a coffee, really. And then they bring a guest and those sorts of things. But the community spirit that, you know.
And do you expect them to hold their annual kind of prize giving night at your place as well? Is there a bit of quid pro quo expected there?
I have no expectation on them whatsoever. The fact that, so, and that's, and I think that's the beauty in it. Like I support a number of sporting clubs, and the only reason I support them is because they came and asked. And some have been regular customers over the years, and they've just asked, and I've said, yep, no dramas. When it's a play group quiz night, same thing. No problems, because I've been on that other side, and I know that all of these people are giving their own time and their own energy, and to be in a position where I can say, you know what, I can give you a $20 voucher. Now, the $20voucher doesn't cost me $20. We all know that.
It costs you like $5 or $6, in fact, doesn't it? In cost of goods, really.
But the good vibes that you get, they advertise, they go, oh, we're going to advertise to our club. I don't even care about it. I know that somewhere down the track it's going to come back to me. And even if it doesn't, there'll be other things that will come back and help our business.
Interesting that you've sort of taken that generosity from being brewed. Well, you're just having to sort of ask and beg so many times yourself. And it's interesting when you do it too, sometimes the people who say no, you think, why did you say no? It's just like, really, what cost is there? The goodwill that they miss out on. And you're obviously in the business of generating enormous amounts of goodwill that way.
And Ken, one thing I'd like to add is I sometimes talk with some business friends of mine, and we talk about how selfish it is to give and to be generous. And sometimes it's a head tilt, because you think, no, you're giving, you're the generous one. And you go, no, I feel so good to be able to do that. Like I get such a kick out of it that knowing that I'm helping that person, I personally like get a real kick out of it. I don't feel like they're stooging me. I don't feel like they're ripping me off. I actually feel such a privilege. And if anything, it's probably a selfish act.
Interesting. What about with arts activities and arts community? Because that's often seen as very different to business. In fact, they have to be a bit business-like. They've got costs and expenses and want to sell tickets or raise funds. How do you interact, and what works there?
So look, we really like the idea of a creative place. We like creativity and community. And when you look at the history of the coffee house and what it was about, they actually attribute it to what they call the Enlightenment era. And it's when people turned from alcohol to coffee. And previously, because water wasn't the cleanest, they'd tip alcohol in it as to almost purify it. But alcohol's a depressant and coffee's a stimulant. So all of a sudden, you had this birth of new ideas. So the French artists at the time, their art wasn't considered valid. So you've got Monet, Manet and Rembrandt hanging out at these coffee houses where the galleries wouldn't display their work because their art wasn't valid. Yeah. And so the coffee house has done that. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, The Hobbit, you know, Lion, Witch, the Wardrobe, those guys shared ideas in the coffee house. So we've got a great history in that. Coffee and ideas goes hand in hand. And so when we have the arts community, all our walls are plastered with art, lots of murals and different things. I don't care who you are, but you are an artist. When you were a kid, you'd grab crayons, you drew on paper, you drew on the wall. We're all artists. And there's something in us. When I have people walk into our space who've never been here before, who've just walked in, they go, I instantly feel like I'm connected here. I love the vibe of it. I like the creativity. And that's what it's all about. That's how you connect with art people, by being authentic and by just allowing it in your space.
And every artist wants the opportunity to showcase their work, whether it's physical or visual or whatever. And it sounds like you give lots of opportunities for that as well. Inspiring. And I guess having space, again, the space to kind of spread out and do some larger things. It's not like just one small wall in a cafe where we're fighting to sort of put up a few pictures.
That's right.
Now, COVID is kind of still around. Actually, it's still around quite seriously, but our perception, our understanding of it and has changed a lot in the last couple of years. Tell us about what you went through. I know in being in Western Australia, you had some pretty kind of tough lockdowns for a long time. It was pretty effective, but what did you learn from that? How did the business change and develop? Any things that you sort of learned and you're not going back to the old ways?
Look, you know what? I think it was a great reset for small business in general, as well as hospitality. Instantly, we started to make decisions that were going to affect our bottom line. It wasn't just about the experience. It wasn't just about what you've always done. A friend of mine was talking to me this morning about a huge olive tree in his garden, and it was 6 meters tall. What he realized is he couldn't reach all the olives. So he cut the olive tree down, and so it's going to bush up a bit more. He's going to be able to reach the olives. He's going to be more effective and still get his fruit. And I think sometimes in business, we keep adding things and adding things and adding things.
Nice. I like that analogy.
And then all of a sudden you go, yeah, well, this is great. But what's it costing you? Is it costing you money? Is it costing your time, your energy, your staff costs? Are they going up? And so one of the things that we did very early on we were open from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., 5 days a week. And then we did 7 to 2 because our area was a bit quiet on weekends. Mm. So instantly what we did was we brought our closing time down, which reduced our costs dramatically. Now, I always knew that the last couple of hours of the day, we didn't make much money. We're a coffee house, so we don't have alcohol. And so that afternoon, people who come in for a coffee or a piece of cake, they sit longer. They're going to drink one coffee. They're going to have one piece of cake, and they'll sit for 2 hours. And it's nice to have a full venue and people know that they can come. But some days you're sitting there with two people in your venue and two staff.
So what did you bring it back to?
So look, initially, when it first happened, we brought it right back to 12 o'clock. People were limited. They weren't coming out anymore. So we were operating from 7 to 12. We took away, we weren't allowed to have dine-in service. So we just had three core staff and we operated like that. When JobKeeper came on, the whole thing exploded. And so we were able to do good things. But we never pushed it back to 5 p.m. We opened till 2, which was, hey, that's where most of our business happened. We did that.
Yeah.
On direction of the manager at the time, I pushed it to 3, regretted it almost instantly because it was like, well, it made no difference to the revenue, only to the bottom line, having an extra couple of staff for that last hour. So some of those sort of things have been really helpful. And so what that's done is now when I look at how the business operates, even things like that, I go, if we're going to open up later, then we need to make sure that liquor license is 100% and it's ready to go and we've got it. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we've got an offering for the afternoon that's going to encourage people to come in and actually come and be in the venue and eat food, whether it's a lunch, a late afternoon beer and snacks, and if we choose to open up for a dinner service as well. So
yeah,
those things have been really helful that I think for the whole industry.
What other things have you done to kind of trim the olive tree, to kind of prune it back so that it's still bearing great fruit and making good profits, but, you know, you've sort of cut out waste or extravagance or whatever?
Yeah, look, I think recently we've just lost our mask mandates in Western Australia at the start of May. And we also had to prove vaccination status to be able to sit into the cafe. And so we've sort of seen a 30% drop since the end of December, since Christmas, which has been pretty tragic. And we've seen a number of cafes having to close their doors around West.
What do you account for that? Has it come back after the mask mandate ended? Is it coming back?
It's only been a couple of weeks now and there's already been a bump. It's a short bump. We've only recently just allowed COVID to exist. So I've had it. I feel so much relief now that I've got it that I'm not worried about it anymore. Yeah. Really, it's going through my staff. So I've had one person who's had it. They've had the week off. I've had another person have it. So it's become, I think as it's prevalent and as more people actually get it, I think they'll relax more. So we had a really strong Mother's Day weekend. That whole weekend leading up to that was back to pre-mask, pre-mandate levels. But we're definitely seeing the daily bump happening. And it's only been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, interesting. Tell us more about Mother's Day. What sort of things did you do? And was it more all just on the one day or did you have things leading up to? What else did you sell people?
Yeah, look, we actually made the menu smaller, did a few sittings for Mother's Day. On a Sunday, we actually have a church group that hire our function centre. They have to walk through the cafe to get there. That's the entrance. We also have a boardroom and a small meeting room that people can hire. The church has those rooms as well. So on the Sunday, it was just a pretty basic day. We just expect more people, have a few extra staff, limit the menu so we can get it out fast and have good quality. And that's pretty much what we did, a free mimosa for mum and just take the booking. So these days don't happen too often and Mother's Day is one of those ones where they just come out for it.
Yeah. What's the, out of interest, what's the booking system that you use?
It's a pretty ordinary one. It's just a...
It's a diary, is it?
It's either via Facebook, it's via in-person, it's via text. However we can get them, we'll take them.
Nice. Okay. Now, you mentioned that you've got a social media company kind of managing and pushing your bookings. Tell us about social media before and now. Do they manage it for the cafe activities as well? And what do they do? And what's why are they so effective, do you think?
Well, look, I've used a few different social media companies over the time, and I've never quite found that the companies had my voice, and that's what I always struggled with. And you end up paying a lot of money for these guys to do the work. It is a great relief because things are happening and it's going out, and I personally struggled with the voice that they were using. So
can you just explain that a little bit more? I kind of understand it, but you know, when you say your voice, and sometimes you hear that term, the brand voice.
Yeah.
What's that mean for your business?
Look, for me, it when your parents try and use cool lingo and you just go, my gosh. And they go, oh.
How embarrassing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's so fly. And it's like, well, hey, coming from an 80-year-old grandmother, it doesn't work. And so sometimes it's they see the venue and they go, oh, it's a cool venue. And so they'll try and creep in lingo and you go, oh, that's lit. Come and try a lit pancakes. And you're going, you know, it's cringe. And it's also, and I personally found that no one writes the copy as good as I personally write it because it's my vision, it's my place. However, I do have to let that go. Otherwise, I can't do everything. So
I guess that's about giving strong guidelines and kind of examples, is it?
Mm. No, but with the booking system, what's really cool is, can I give them a shout out?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so look, it's actually a New Zealand company called Be Social, and I found them through their Facebook marketing.
Be Social or B?
Be Social.
Letter B.
Mm-hmm. Be Social New Zealand. So what happens is they post some ads about function centres, our function space, and as someone clicks on the ad, it goes instantly to our messenger. It asks them 5 questions. It asks them their email address, their phone number, the date of their proposed party, the amount of people they want to have, and then they shed phone call with their operator who's in New Zealand, who's got a New Zealand accent, but they use an Australian mobile phone number, so it actually looks like it's this to our staff. Pre-work involves a whole bunch of frequently asked questions, and what he does is he just puts, a very friendly guy, he just puts a voice to that system, asks them about their event, asks them some more questions, answers a whole bunch of questions they have from the frequently asked questions, and he'll keep updating those as the questions come through, and then he'll line up a meeting with our person here at the venue so the person gets a tour. So when you've got someone who's coming in and their date, it's available, you know how hard you need to put.
They've been qualified in terms of their budget and those kind of things.
That's right. So that comes in really handy. And so really enjoying the process. The fact that they phone them and I'm not having to, and that they'll arrange a meeting that I've given some parameters and just send me a calendar invite, I can go from the notes, meet with the client, offer them a coffee, give them a tour of the venue. And from that, it's still very early days, but we've been able to book a number of events. And our event space, we hire an event space, we charge an event space fee. So it starts at $1,760 for our function center, or the cafe space is $1,500. Then we charge them for catering. Then we charge staff and those sorts of things. So it's been...
That's a nice earner.
Yeah, it's been very good. Uh-huh.
And do you close your cafe space? Do you close your cafe for a function, or this is just in the evening?
So we won't close a cafe for a function. The function space can operate independently of a cafe. There's doors; they just have to walk through it. We're not open in the evening, so if someone books that space, we just won't have the cafe operate.
Right.
If they book the cafe space, then that's the space that they use as well.
Right. And looking at your website, I get that kind of brand voice is very strongly apparent there. It's edgy and creative and a little bit feral in a nice sort of safe way.
Yeah.
How do you brand? Does the social media company, do they kind of manage all the photography as well, or is that under your art direction?
Look, I've had great content, so I've just I've given them the content. They've put the ads together. We've got some video walkthroughs. So there's even a process where if someone's asking a bit more at the venue, they can send them a link to a video walkthrough that shows them the space.
That's
been really helpful.
Because, I mean, if someone's a couple of hours away, they'd like to visit, but sometimes actually, and these days, maybe it's not necessary. Yeah. You just have a FaceTime and just kind of walk through with the phone or something.
That's right,
like
yeah.
That. Yeah. And Instagram, Facebook, other social media, what do you find most effective, or how's that kind of evolved?
Look, one thing I noticed very early on, we basically only did Facebook posts. Then I tried Instagram and I posted a picture of a banana bread. It had a blob of ice cream on top, some drizzle of honey and some pecans, and I called it pimped up banana bread. And I just posted on Instagram, not on Facebook. And it was purely by accident. I didn't know you could link the two at the time. The next day, I had three women turn up and they said, "We're here for the pimped up banana bread." And I hadn't seen that response on Facebook. So what I discovered with that was I really discovered that there's two different audiences. A Facebook audience and an Instagram audience are totally different.
Nice. Great insight. Yeah.
Because I'm lazy, I only post on the one platform. I post on Instagram and I let it share to Facebook. But depending on what I'm posting, it has a different response. So I can post the same ad and get a lot more engagement on Instagram and almost nothing on Facebook, or a lot of engagement on Facebook and little on Instagram.
Are you doing Facebook stories and reels as well?
Yeah, look, I'm big on the stories. Look, maybe it's my age and my generation. I actually enjoy that. I find that easy to do. The content's only on for 24 hours, so it drops off. And the perfectionist in me is okay with that because it's not going to be around forever. It's only there for 24 hours. So the copy, there's no writing to do. I can spend days worrying about the copy that I write down. So this way it's all spoken or it's visuals and I'm...
Yeah. Experimenting with TikTok at all?
Look, I'd like to. We've tried a few reels. There's a bit involved with that. I haven't got my head around it. I haven't got the staff to do it either, but it's something that is in the back of my head to push.
Yeah, nice. Well, look, I like TikTok, but at the same time, I don't see many cafes and restaurants. They're kind of dishing up the same video, like the 30-second version of something longer, and it's not. TikTok's got its own particular style, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look forward to your experiments there, hopefully. So a business owner that's listening to this, or maybe they've got that kind of community heart or something, and I think a lot of businesses, people go into business wanting to really kind of make strong connections with the community and all the rest, then they get busy and exhausted and the last thing they want to do when they close at 4 o'clock is hang around. They just want to go home and see the family or sleep. But what's your advice about kind of building up that community? I mean, you've got like, and I don't know if they're really two tribes. It kind of sounds a bit like it. There's the kind of the business community, then you've got the creative community, and I'm sure there's a few others as well. But what's your advice for someone who wants to kind of do this, but also they got a life they want to run and that, you know, they can't be too exhausted?
Look, I get energy from talking to people. I get energy from talking to people who are in similar situations. And one thing I find is when I meet a business person, whether it's out socially, whether it's at a business networking event, whether it's in whatever form, whether it's sitting at the cafe, there's this instant, they get it. Because being in business is hard. Hospitality is one of the hardest. There's so many moving parts. I've got customers who they've got mining companies or resource companies and they do one thing and they do it well and on a large scale and they make so much more money than we do. And yet in hospitality, we make our money. For me, coffee's our core business. We're making it $5 at a time. That takes a lot of coffees to start making some money.
The thing that we've got though is where people will want to talk to you ahead of talking to someone who's making mining equipment because you're more interesting. Or they presume you are.
Look, you know what? We made the decision to send our kids to an elite school locally to the area, and I drive a dirty old ute that I can chuck the hay in the back for the cows and chuck the kids in and their bikes and all that sort of stuff. And some of these guys are, you know, you see the cars turn up and we have to stretch ourselves to send our two kids to the grammar school.
Yeah.
But, and sometimes you go to the events and there's a lot of, what do you do? I'm in engineering. And you instantly, for me, I personally go, oh, another one. Oh,
right.
But when you meet a business owner, there is that connection. And so, look, I don't know if it's for everybody, but for me, I think it's worth investing that time in connecting with other businesses.
Yeah.
And I learn from everybody. From businesses that do well, you can pick up some great things. And guys who do it badly, you can actually look at that and go, oh, yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lessons there too,
and,
aren't there?
You know,
yeah.
And across all industries as well.
Yes.
So, look, I think...
So at the school function, you're actually the one that people want to... You're the more interesting one. They probably want advice on their brand of coffee you use and roasting tips.
Look, and absolutely. All sorts of... and you know what? Just there's just something about the pressures of being a business owner. And when you meet someone else that has it, there's that instant connection. And I really love it. And for me, I hear their story and they'll tell me their struggles or I'll tell them mine. And I leave energized, ready to tackle them and go...
Yeah.
You know, and when you hear bad stories, you go, oh, it's not just me. and when you hear good stories, you go, oh, yeah, I'm gonna take that too. I'm going to use that. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Wow. It's such an inspiration talking to you, Mike. I'd sort of identified that I've always had a topic around community involvement with cafes. I have topics for my podcast, a lot of topics, and I just haven't found the right person yet. But I knew I was pretty sure I'd found the right person with you, and I definitely, the last half hour of us talking has definitely confirmed that. So how do people connect with you and find out what you're doing online?
Well, look, if you want a really sloppy response, add me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So Mike Matic on LinkedIn, and if you send me a message there, sometime in the next 2 months, I'll get back to you. alternatively, if you reach out via the Crooked Spire Coffee House social medias, eventually it will get to me and I'm probably a bit more chatty on that. But if you want to talk, if you want to connect, if you want to get involved with the local chamber that I'm involved with as well, or I recommend that you find your own chamber of commerce locally and connect with other businesses there.
Mm,
I think that's really helpful.
And remember, you're probably going to be the most interesting person in the room.
Yeah.
So enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the ride. Great talking to you. Really enjoyed it very much. Thanks, Mike.
Excellent. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.